Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're with the Priest, the Pom and the Poof on the Spirit Lounge, the show that explores sexuality and spirituality for our community.
And a big thanks to Roundup. And we've got another fun-packed show, but you have survived Christmas, I see.
Yep, we've all survived Christmas. Happy Boxing Day.
Did you get any good presents?
Yeah, but I'm not telling.
Oh, I must have been very good this year.
Actually, I didn't get too much because 2012 is a bit of a big year for me in terms of birthdays.
60.
Yeah, thank you, darling. Love you. Love you too.
Oh, the big 60, isn't that great?
Really?
I think I'm going to have to get Botox now. Oh, Andrew,
Andrew believes it. Oh, Andrew, that's not a good way to end the year, darling. Anyway, I think we better change the subject. Tonight's show, we're talking to Jenny and Lisa from Out and Around.
Sorry.
Oh, and they've lost it now completely.
Andrew, you can really go off people, you know.
Oh, for goodness.
He's having a hot flush now.
I was just sitting over here going, no, surely that's not right.
Can I suggest
Joy's saying it with such confidence.
Can I suggest that you also visit an optician as quickly as you can? Otherwise, I'm heading for the Botox
anyway,
bloody fast.
You two, I'm going to introduce our first track, and it's Adele with One and Only.
So we're now catching up with Jenny and Lisa, who are from San Francisco, but they left the comforts of their Californian home to embark on a year-long 40,000-mile journey across the world in search of the super gays. And those are people who are creating change for their LGBTI communities. Their trip's taking them to 15 countries across Asia, Africa, and South America, places where the LGBTI movement is just starting to emerge. Now, girls, welcome back. It's lovely to have you on the line again. Are you hearing us okay?
Yeah, it's great to be back.
That's great. Now, last time we spoke to you, you'd been to New Zealand and Australia, and you were in the Philippines, which is where we'd like to pick up the story. Now, at the time, we didn't know how special the Philippines was going to be. Do you want to tell us why?
Well, Jenny really surprised me, and she actually had already talked to my family and had plans to propose. And so she had been carrying my grandfather's wedding ring on her, and she took me out to the beach and said she had a special song to play me. And I was pretty shocked. She proposed, and of course I said yes, and then I told her that I had a surprise for her. And it's funny because I had actually thought that Lisa was thinking about proposing before we left on the trip. So I kept trying to throw her off the track by saying, oh, I'm not ready right now. Let's think about it when we get back from the trip. So I was trying to throw her off track. And it turned out that actually this whole time during our travel, she also had a ring for me. So she was carrying in her bag her mother's, who passed away a couple years, about 5 years ago. She was carrying her mother's wedding ring. So after I proposed to her, she brought me back into our hotel room, and then she gave me her mother's ring. So it was very, very special and surprising. And, of course, her family had been hearing from both sides, both me and her, telling them that we were planning to get married, but each side didn't know yet. So it's kind of laughing at the joke the whole time, and so it was very special.
Well, you two are obviously made for each other, and it's a beautiful story that you were both planning the same thing, and there is such significance to both of your engagement rings. It's a fabulous, fabulous story. Well, congratulations to you both.
Now, you went from there to Indonesia, where I believe you learned how to cook and surf. Is that correct?
Yeah, we really just try to immerse ourselves in the culture of each country. And, you know, Bali, of course, is known for its great surfing, and it was something that we both had wanted to try. So we signed up for a week-long class. You know, we discovered that we're not natural surfers by any means. But, you know, we loved being there. I mean, in Bali, we took surf lessons. In the Philippines, we took windsurfing lessons. In India, we just spent 2 weeks in an ashram. And in Nepal, we trekked. So, I mean, we just kind of try to dive into it and, you know, camouflage ourselves into the culture. And it's a great adventure.
So what super gays did you meet in Bali?
So Bali was very, you know, Indonesia in general is a very, I couldn't say it's the easiest place to find a super gays because Indonesia is largely Muslim. And there's been a lot of things happening in Indonesia where, you know, the very conservative Muslims have been, you know, attacking LGBT groups who try to convene in Indonesia. So we had, Lisa must have sent out 50 or so emails and phone calls trying to reach people, and we had a tough time. But in Bali, you know, it's funny, you kind of meet people in the most random places. While we were at the surf school, we saw this guy, and we thought, maybe this guy's gay, I'm not sure, how do we approach the subject? And, you know, we basically started talking to him and told him about our trip and our travels and why we were doing our travels. And he said, hey, I'm gay too. So we ended up talking to him, and he had grown up in Jakarta, and he had left Jakarta because it was so hard to be gay there. He said he lost a lot of his friends when he came out, and he moved to Bali because Bali is a lot more accepting, and it's a lot more urban and westernized too. So he was creating a new life in Bali. And luckily for him, his family, his mother knew and was supportive. And then in Bali, we also met another man, a young man, who is a local community HIV outreach worker. Mm-hmm. And he lived with his boyfriend, and we spent the whole day with him. They took us to their homes and their parents' houses, their families. They took us to the temples, and they really just share their life lesson. They're obviously out to their friends, to some of the friends, but their families do not know. And I think that's the case for most people in Indonesia. It seems that their families don't know. Mm. Or if they do know, they're not accepting. So it's still difficult.
And the people you met in Bali, girls, were they all Muslim or were some of them Buddhist? Because I think that's quite, there's quite a lot of Buddhist people in Bali.
It's Hindu, actually. Yeah, Bali is primarily a Hindu country, and it's kind of a mixed Hinduism where it's very mixed with, like, the traditional Balinese religion as well. So when we went with our friend, he took us to all those temples. And I think the nice thing, what we realized more, was every country, oops, I don't know if you can hear this, we hear some weird beeping noises, I'll ignore it. With every country that we've been to, a lot of them have dominant religions, such as the Philippines is a very Catholic country, Indonesia is Muslim, India and Nepal are Hindu. And it's very interesting how the different religions affect society's acceptance to LGBT people. And I think, at least with the Hindus and Buddhist countries, it seems that it's a little bit easier because the religions are a little bit less absolute, I would say. That's my opinion, and it seems that it's not as much religion that's the problem in those countries. It's more just family pressures to marry and have a traditional family, things like that.
And that track was Where I Belong by Building 429. And we're going to resume our wonderful interview with Jenny and Lisa, who are from Out and Around. And we're picking up with them in India.
Now, from Indonesia, the next step in your travels was to Cambodia. Tell us about the super gay with 10 sisters whose life's work it is to help lesbians.
Well, I loved him. Saran was he's a lesbian activist. And, you know, as an HIV social worker, who's a woman who, you know, primarily works for men's health, you know, it's so rare to be a man working for women's health. And, you know, he told us that he has 10 sisters and that, you know, growing up, he's watched the inequalities of gender in his country. And so many times in these developing countries, you think, wow, it's so hard to be LGBT, but it's so hard to be a woman. Mm-hmm. And so he really started working with women and then found that actually the lesbians were much worse off and much more in and he created a whole network of support groups throughout the country where he does trainings, and he finds local lesbians to the weekly support groups, and then he does the overall trainings. So he has a network of like 700 queer women. And, I mean, this guy was on fire. Like, we met up with him, and, you know, he was telling us all the meetings he had that day. He had just been to the UN General Assembly speaking on behalf of lesbian rights. And we were just blown away by him. We were really, really touched at how educated he was and at how motivated he was. And the majority of his work is volunteer. He had a partial grant through one of the local LGBT organizations, and that was on hold. So he was basically, you know, working, you know, this is a, seems to us like a full-time job on top of his other full-time job.
He sounds absolutely amazing. It sounds like he had a harem of lesbians. Quite extraordinary. Now, girls, Jenny, your parents are from Taiwan, and you, from your website, I can tell that you used to visit often. Now, when you visited this time to the extended family, what was it like for you when you introduced Lisa? And didn't your mum show up?
Yeah, you're right. My mom happened to be there. They lived in the States, but my mom went back to be with my grandparents who lived there. And my family has not been accepting of my sexuality and my relationship with Lisa. And it's been a five-year journey with them already. And we tried to go into family therapy before Lisa and I left on the trip. But it was good because we got everything out in the open, but it was bad because it was clear that they, coming from a very religious standpoint, felt that I was living a sinful life. So, and they're just not comfortable with seeing Lisa. So when we were in Taiwan, basically the agreement was my mother originally wanted me to leave Lisa and just stay with her and the grandparents for a week. And I said, no. I said, no, I can't do that. This is Lisa and I, this is our trip. And so we agreed that I would go see them, but Lisa wouldn't come. So I went to see the family on my own. And it was really stressful because my mom had come up with this whole story of how I was traveling with several people in order to give a story to my relatives. And I had to constantly make up this thing on how I was traveling with a group of people. And it was hard. It was very hard. But on the good note is that I realized that actually most of my extended family already knows, thanks to the power of Facebook. No, it actually wasn't a secret after all. And I actually had a few aunts that were supportive, too. So that was huge for me because so far I've had almost very, very little support from my family at all. So I'm hopeful that things will eventually change. But, yeah, Taiwan wasn't the easiest place for us.
I'm sure. And I hope for you that your aunts can have some influence over your mum, perhaps, you know.
Yes, I hope so too.
Now, you moved on from there to China, and I believe that you were shadowing the organizers of Shanghai Pride. What was it like?
You know, it's amazing the difference that a very small group of people can make. We actually had happened to meet one of the organizers when we were in California, because Jenny and I do the AIDS Life Cycle every year, this fundraiser for the LA Gay and Lesbian Center and the San Francisco AIDS Foundation. And they have this great program, the LA Gay and Lesbian Center, in which they train international activists from around the world, but primarily from China. And so he and two others have basically been organizing Shanghai Pride. And, I mean, China is a huge country. These three people run this pretty small Pride Festival in terms of, you know, a Westerner perspective. But they get about 3,000 people out there for the week. They have a range of activities. They're not allowed to march or do a pride parade because of the an organization in China and the way that the government doesn't allow protests and demonstrations. But it's a very, prideful event for the community that's there. They've involved all of the local LGBT groups. And we met with them, and we could just see how important this was. And, I mean, something that kind of blew my mind away was they do this whole week-long event, and their budget's $2,500. I mean, I went home, and I give myself some perspective. I Googled San Francisco Pride Festival budget, which is $3 million. So, you know, the organizers are pretty stressed out, and they're stressed out every year to financially pull this off. And it's just such a relatively small amount of money. So, you know, it's just Shanghai Pride is something that, you know, is such a ray of hope for LGBT people in China because they're aware of it. It gets in the newspapers. And, you know, besides Shanghai, there's just one other event in Beijing. Mm-hmm. So it's just something that we really all should support.
Because actually you've mentioned on your website that, you know, I mean, I don't know what the population is of China. It's billions, isn't it? And I mean, so there's potentially millions of gay people in China if they all came out, aren't there?
It's the largest LGBT. I mean, it's very hard to be out in China. We were actually pretty shocked in Shanghai. We met with a lesbian group. And I mean, this is like, these are like the L-word lesbians of Shanghai, like very educated women who, you know, have a great lifestyle. And, you know, one woman I worked with who was working for an international company was telling me that she's going to enter into a faux marriage, and which is a fake, you know, a fake marriage. She's going to marry a gay man. She's out to her parents, but she wants to have a child. And in Chinese society, it's just not accepted that a child doesn't have a father. Mm. So, you know, it's just very difficult for people to be living out lives in China, not because of religion, really, but more because of societal structure. We're hoping that in the future, hopefully, there won't be a need to have fake marriages. There's even actually a website for you know, matching gay men and gay women for marriages.
Do you think that there's any extra pressure on the boys rather than the girls to live an out lifestyle in China with such an emphasis on the male line of the family?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, certainly it is more of a kind of man-heavy emphasis culture. I think, you know, my opinion is that all over the world, I think gay men probably do suffer a bit more on the homophobia side from homophobia than women do. Society, like if you look at a lot of the new LGBT films that are coming out in Asia, a lot of the first ones are about lesbian relationships. For example, India, the famous film called Fire is about a lesbian relationship. And I think it's easier for society to see that than it is to see two men together. So, I mean, I'm sure there is that pressure.
And you're on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. We are here every Monday, 9 till 10. But from Tuesday, the 3rd of January, you are going to find us here every Tuesday night from 9 till 10, so please make a note. New slot, new day. And that was Sarah McLachlan with Winter Song. And just in a minute, we're going to catch up with Jenny and Lisa again, who are from Out and Around. And we caught up with them a couple of weeks ago now, talking to us from India. You moved on to Nepal, and I was looking at your website today, and I was completely transfixed by this amazing transgender activist. Don't know if I'm going to pronounce this right, Bhumika.
Yeah, we were blown away by her as well. I mean, she's beautiful, she's well-spoken, she's, you know, on fire, and she's only 24.
Oh, my God, she's only, I can't believe it. Sorry, I cut in there. What I find fascinating, listening to what you've just been saying about China and how you describe China, and then suddenly we go to a country like Nepal, which you've said on your website, they've created a third legal gender, they've legalized same-sex marriage, and this wonderful transgender activist that you've met seems to be making really trailblazing.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, Nepal's gone through such political instability, and certainly, you know, they had a civil war within the last 10 years, and there's just, they're recreating their parliament and their constitution right now, and they've had some really progressive judges favor in for LGBT rights, and it's, you know, we met this woman, Bhumika, and you can just tell, like, change, it really empowers individuals. And she knows exactly that, you know, the police force is you know, behind her, laws are behind her, and she feels very empowered to create and ask for change. So for us, it was just amazing to be in Nepal and to, you know, of course, see how that gets implemented. I mean, you know, Nepal is such a diverse country and a very, very poor country. Mm. And so there's still the work to do in terms of changing culture and you know, educating individuals about homophobia and transphobia. But the incredible thing is that, you know, the law is behind them. Even Hillary Clinton this week mentioned Nepal when she spoke to the UN and to the world about LGBT rights.
Wow, go Hillary. Now, and how was your trekking in the Himalayas? Did you have a bit of time out and good fun?
Oh, yeah. We spent 3 weeks in the Himalayas, which for me, you know, the most I've ever hiked in a row. I did like a two-night backpacking trip once at least. So it was a lot. It was, and I remember asking myself in the middle of trekking, like, we were climbing up all these steps, and I asked myself, we actually enjoy trekking. But I have to say that you are really, really beautiful. And we had a good time, too, meeting the locals, because when you trek, you stay in basically these guest houses run by families, and they live there, too. And after 3 p.m., when you're done with the day, there's nothing to do but sit by the fire, because it's too cold to do anything else. And so you're sitting there, and you're talking to the travelers, and you're talking to a lot of the local people, too, with the porters and the guest house hosts. And, of course, for them, you know, these are rural people. A lot of them are, where we were trekking, a lot of them were Tibetan refugees. And they would ask us, you know, the natural question, which is, where you're from, and do you have a family? Are you married? Do you have children? And that was, you know, it was hard. At least it was a little easier time with this. For me, sometimes it's hard for me to just start that conversation. So, but I felt like I had to. So I would explain to them. I said, well, I don't have a husband, but, in, you know, sometimes women marry men, but women can also marry women. And so I'm going to her, and I'm pointing at Lisa, and they look at me like a little bit of a shock, but in Nepal, it's been interesting. The reaction has mostly been like, oh, okay, and then we talk about something else. So, I mean, we must have come out at least like 10 different times throughout those 3 weeks.
So
and I still remember the funniest scene was Lisa had like a group of 10 high schoolers from Kathmandu on a field trip surrounding her. And she was really giving the big gay speech to them, and they were just looking at her wide up and incredulous. But it's been nice to have the opportunity to hopefully give a positive perception of gay people to local people.
So where are you now in the world?
We're in India. We're in Delhi right now, and we're really excited about the people we're interviewing here in Delhi. We just met with Ashok Rokavi, and he was the first person, I mean, in a country of a billion people, he was the first at something. He was the first person to out himself publicly, and he's been a long-term gay rights activist. He started the biggest HIV trust here in India, and he also... He's a journalist, so he also opened up a LGBT magazine, which is a big magazine here. So we just met with him this week. We're also going to be meeting with Prince Manvedra, which is very exciting. This is the prince who was on Oprah a few years ago because he publicly came out, and he's the first royal member of India to come out. After he had gone through a forced marriage and a mental breakdown. So he's been a very large figure in the LGBT community.
Yeah.
And then we're also meeting with one of the attorneys who worked on the case in 2009, which overturned the law making homosexual acts illegal. So, you know, things are also happening. I mean, it just... In each country, we're just more and more, convinced that things are just progressing and change is happening faster than we think. And there's a lot of
positive things going on in the world right now.
And that was, of course, Katie Lang.
And I knew you'd sneak her in somewhere.
I didn't even sneak. I just put her in and sing it loud. If she ever comes to Australia and wants to talk to us, you're banned from the studio, by the way. And we are going back to the interview now with the last part of the interview with Jenny and Lisa, and you're on Joy 94.9 with the Priest, the Pom and the Poof.
Lisa, you seem to have a challenge with clothes and haircuts. Which is worse, a bad hair day or having a limited wardrobe?
You know what? Actually, I just stopped clothes shopping because I bought so many clothes in China because I got it all custom made. I mean, for me, that was like I've been waiting for a couple of years because I knew that I could do that. And I got a wedding suit tailored, and I got like 10 work shirts made, so I'm ready for interviews when I go back. And I mean, that in itself is just, you know, hilarious. I mean, I give the big gay speech because I am so gay. I mean, I'm a butch woman. I have a very feminine body, though. So China was a real treat. And in general, in Asia, when you travel, you know, a men's size small fits me. In the States, a men's size small is really baggy. So I love clothes shopping here in Asia. The haircuts are definitely, I don't know. Like, I just got my hair cut in Nepal, and it seemed like I stuck my head in a pencil sharpener. I went to a nice salon to get it fixed. Like, I went to a really upscale place because I just looked so horrible. And the woman told me, "Oh, I'm sorry, we can't cut your hair here." And I said, "Oh, you know, I'm a woman." And she's like, "Oh, that's okay, but we just don't cut short hair." So then I said, "Well, where do I go?" And she sent me to a barber down the street who actually ended up giving me a great haircut. And it's kind of also weird, like, cut up.
Brilliant. We've been enjoying those stories.
So where are you going to be spending Christmas and New Year's Eve?
We're going to be spending Christmas in Udaipur here in India, which is a romantic city. And we'll be in Mumbai for New Year's. So we'll be in the big gay town.
Fantastic. Girls, it's I have absolutely loved following you on your website. It's just you absolutely have to write a book one day. If I was a publisher, I'd be signing you up already. We would love to catch up with you again, perhaps when you're in Africa.
Yeah, no, we'd love to. We're going to meet some great people. We're starting to line up for Kenya right now. So we'd love to share it with you. And thanks so much for following us.
Well, that'd be really good. And perhaps by the time you get to South Africa, we probably will have a decent time difference and also, you know, quite a good line. Now, if our listeners want to follow Jenny and Lisa, tales of their not-so-straight journey can be found on the website, which is outandaround.com. Jenny and Lisa, it's been absolutely great to hear your dulcet tones again. We'd like to wish you a very Merry Christmas and a safe New Year.
Great, and you too. Thanks so much. And, we actually have to give a shout-out because we had two people write us yesterday from Melbourne, a lesbian couple who are about to take off on their journey. So we're really excited just to hear from them and know that there's other gay couples, you know, following the same path.
Fantastic. Well, many congratulations again. I think what you're doing is so innovative. It's very inspiring.
Thanks a lot.
See ya. We'll catch you soon. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And who are we ending our program with?
We are ending our program with our last program for 2011 with the wonderful ABBA. We've got you love Katie Lang.
Is it Dancing Queen?
No. It's I Have a Dream, which is a beautiful song. Thank you for joining us. I hope you've had a fabulous Boxing Day. And please don't forget that Spirit Lounge is back with you on the 3rd of January. We're now on a Tuesday night from 9 till 10 every week. Have a great New Year. We'll see you on the 3rd of January.
Good night.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.